Well, welcome back to another episode of Just Another Bozo on the Bus. I'm your host, Paul Randack, and I'm here this week with Alicia Matthews. Welcome, Alicia.
Hi.
It's good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and I also want to welcome all our fellow bozos, those who are listeners of Just Another Bozo on the Bus, the podcast that is available on most platforms. I haven't found one yet that it's not available on, but I'm sure you can find it somewhere on the web. Couple program notes. Next week, Brett Heiner will be coming on the show. It's been, I'm going to say 6-7 months since Brett was on. We've got a lot to catch up on. And then the following week, which I think is the 6th, Rebecca Holt will be here and we'll be doing some sound weaving and talking about her life and her story and all the adventures that she's been on. But this week, Alicia gets to tell us about her story and why she is just another bozo on the bus. So, are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Okay. Are you a Salt Lake native? I don't know
if
I ever knew that or not.
Yep.
Okay.
Born and raised.
In Salt Lake or, yep. or nearby?
I would say Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. Everywhere around, okay. But yeah.
Okay. Tell us about your youth. Tell us about what it was like growing up here. And
you know, I love Utah. The mountains are part of my everyday life and I would say recovery. Hiking and camping and snowshoeing, snowboarding. But yeah, I loved Salt Lake. Still do. Still love it. But
there's a lot of snow.
I love snow. Love snow.
Why the snow?
I don't know. I just think it's so pretty and I just recently started snowboarding again since I was from when I was little. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just love it. It's peaceful and I feel like it's quiet time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just love it.
By the way, do you listen to music when you snowboard?
I do.
You do?
I do. Yeah, sometimes. Other times I fall and I'll lose my earbuds. But yeah, I do.
Well, that's part of the fun of snowboarding.
It is.
According to most of the people I know that do it.
Yeah.
Say, you know.
You almost break your neck a few times, but okay. No, just kidding. Yeah. But yeah.
So tell us what your beautiful bozo story is.
Yeah, I have to think from the beginning. It's been a while. So I was a really good student from, you know, elementary school till the freshman year of high school. And I was getting straight A's. I was a really good student, like I said. About halfway through freshman year, literally my grades went from straight A's to straight F's, which is really interesting. It didn't gradually go down. It just went down
in one semester kind of thing?
Yeah. Oh. And so, you know, what happened? So I was working at a dance studio and I used to dance on a team and...
What kind of dance?
Everything from contemporary to modern to ballet to jazz to hip hop, a lot of things. And that was like my full-time job besides school, like 40 hours a week dedicated. And then I worked there too to help me pay for how it costs to be on a team or whatever. Yeah. And I started to dabble with marijuana here and there. And it wasn't a real big deal.
I mean, you're saying during that time?
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, I did it before, like in junior high, but I didn't really like it and I didn't really care for it, you know? But then I remember dabbling in it more and my best friend at the time, we kind of just agreed to like start trying drugs, I guess. I would say, and drinking more. It was a weird thing. It was a weird thing.
One day you just had a conversation.
We literally did. Right. It's weird. Yeah.
Like, did she dance with you? And
No, I just knew her from school. Grew up with her almost like through junior high till high school and stuff. And I got a new car because I was doing so good in school and doing good in dance and trying hard, but little did we know that was my downfall. The start of my downfall is when I got the car.
Oh.
Yeah.
It gave you mobility.
I started to not go to school anymore, and I started to smoke more marijuana and drink a little more. That was my downfall. The car started it all.
what was, by the way, I just want to go back. So in junior high or middle school, whatever it's called, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
But were you, and you said you were, you tried marijuana a few times.
Yeah.
What were those circumstances? Was it at friends' houses? Was it, I'm always curious where people are, begin their little road.
It was outside. It was never at someone's house.
Right. No, I get it. Yeah.
But because we were really young. I mean, mm-hmm. we couldn't really just do it. But or in someone's backyard or something. Mm-hmm. But the first time I actually felt the effects of marijuana was in a park. Because before then I didn't, know what I was really doing, mm-hmm. and I didn't get high. And yeah, so it's usually outside, I guess. Okay. And just young kids not knowing what we're really doing or what we're, but
we don't know what we're doing. We're just smoking this.
Good.
We're smoking this herb.
Seems normal.
Okay.
But the car was my downfall and, start of my downfall. I wouldn't say my downfall. And I started to miss school a lot more. We started to, smoke a lot more marijuana, started to drink a lot more. And then I just hit this phase where I stopped kind of going to school. Like, I would go sometimes here and there, but I wouldn't go. And they used to call my mom because in high school they regulate when you go and when you don't and when you miss periods and stuff. And they would call my mom, and my mom would be like, "Did you miss? I mean, I got a call from the school today." And it would happen every day. And I would just lie to her and say that mm-hmm. I was there, but we all know she knew that I wasn't there.
Right.
And
I am a parent of 8 kids, so
true.
It's yeah, I know. So I've heard it all.
Yeah. And then I started to do more drugs, more like psychedelics, I guess I would say. And I did acid one night and didn't wake up for my shift the next morning and at the dance studio. Uh-huh. And I've known my boss from that time. She's known me since I was 5 years old and is really good friends with my mom. And apparently this happened. I didn't know this happened, but she called my mom and just said, Alicia's, I don't know if she's on drugs or... something's wrong, but I can't have her work here anymore, and like warn my mom that she's gonna fire me.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was like, I understand, and you gotta do what you gotta do for your business, and and I didn't know. And then the next day she's like, we need to talk, and I had a feeling, but I was hoping it was just like a warning almost. And
this is the first time you'd missed a shift?
Yes. And she fired me that day.
Wow.
And it was really hard on myself. And during this time period, I wasn't really going to school, but I did get a job randomly.
You mean after you got fired?
No, during. So, like, before. I got a job at a restaurant.
So you had already started working another job, too, besides this mm-hmm. job, which sounded like it was full-time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And doing school.
Mm-hmm.
And now,
but I was
now getting high is off pretty much every day.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Every day. And I started drinking probably at that point, I would say like 4 times a week. A lot for a 16-year-old, 17-year-old.
Sure.
Yeah. And then I got fired, but I was working at Red Robin at the time. And when I started Red Robin is when I started to dabble into different things. And before, when I was about, 16, I started to do some pills here and there.
Mm-hmm.
you know, ingest or snort, whatever you want to call it, all of it.
Did you know what you were taking?
Usually, I know this is bad, but no, not usually. We had like a form of Xanax that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But I, that was the only thing I knew of. But
yeah, you're probably doing opiates too then?
Yeah, okay. A little bit. I mean, I wasn't super all in, mm-hmm. I guess I would say. I was very universal at that time. Okay. I did everything, mm-hmm. and really anything.
Did you have a primary even back then, though?
I don't... Not yet. Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are it kind of formed.
You, I don't know if I know this. Are you an only... Oh, yeah.
Are an only child. Yeah.
I do know that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Single parent raised, too. So, yeah.
Right.
Only child. But, yeah.
You and your mom.
Me and my mom.
Joined at the hip.
Joined at the hip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll go back to it. We'll come back to that one.
Okay. But yeah, I got fired and I had this other job that introduced me to all these drugs. World, I guess you could say.
Oh, the service industry.
Yeah.
Good education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting time in my life, but yeah, I got fired and I just decided that night that the next day, and I also got stood up for my homecoming date too, and so I was just like, at that time and moment, I was like, you know what, I don't have anything holding me back from going nuts, I guess.
As far as school goes, did the grades stay down, or did they come back up at all?
Nope.
During this period?
Nope. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
What was your mom doing? I'm just curious.
I know she was working a lot. I don't remember.
You don't remember about conversations with her about
we
school?
Fought a lot. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And she knew I was not doing well. I don't think she knew what to do. But I was so, like, my brain was mush, I think. Because I really, that time in my life, like, is really hard to remember. Hmm. Like, there's certain things I remember, but it's all jumbled into one, like, time period.
Okay.
But she thought I was just going kind of through a phase. I remember talking to her about that.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know that I was doing other drugs at the time. She thought I was just drinking a little bit and smoking weed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but it was a lot more serious than that. But we fought a lot, and if you were to know, like, us now, that's crazy, you know? Like, we fought every day. We couldn't stand each other to be in the same room. I rarely would sleep at my own house. Yeah. It was, yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, then I just went crazy, and...
And what does crazy look like?
Crazy looks like drinking every day, moved out of my house for like 3 weeks and ran away, I would say. I wouldn't say moved out. Crashing, stealing my mom's car and crashing both of them, and then...
What do you mean both? I mean your car and your mom's car?
Yeah, but they're under my mom's
name. Do you remember these accidents?
One of them I do. Yes, kind of. Sort of.
I'm just curious. I mean, you were conscious at the time of the accidents?
Okay. Yeah.
You weren't blacked out, so I guess.
No, I don't think so. No, I would. Yeah,
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Not necessarily a clear indicator.
Yeah.
That you
but
were
no,
aware.
I was not blacked out.
Okay.
But yeah, and just doing every drug I could.
You're just consuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm going to ask you a question that I'll probably ask you a couple times.
Though. Okay.
So, did you ever have any curiosity why at this point?
Why I did
or were
it?
You just running?
Yeah, at that point in my life, that exact point when I got fired and then I just went off the rails,
mm-hmm.
yes, I just literally marathon, like,
mm-hmm.
there was no stopping me and...
So you had there was no introspection at all about why you were doing this at that point?
Nope. And now, you know, obviously looking back, like, mm-hmm. I can put the pieces together. I mean, we did in treatment, but mm-hmm. at the time I didn't understand, like, I didn't want to deal with it. And I feel like I've already found at the time things that helped me cope with it. And this is how I coped. And being a dance teacher and dancing helped me somewhat keep it kind of together a little mm-hmm. bit, besides mm-hmm. the school thing. And I would go sometimes, but it wasn't nearly, like, I didn't do homework. I don't remember homework at all. But, yeah, I just
took two cars crashed, not living at home.
Yeah, doing a lot of drugs every day.
Doing a lot of drugs every day.
And started to dabble into methamphetamine.
Oh. Mother's little helper.
I know. God, yeah. So not good. Not good. But, yeah, I did.
Why do you say not good?
It's just, it's scary to look back at that because I'm not, the person I was 5-6 years ago mm-hmm. is not the person I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to believe I, you know, was so wrapped up in it. And so, I don't know.
Were you staying up? I mean, a traditional meth user is someone who can sometimes stay up for 3 or 4 or 5 yeah. days at a time.
Yeah.
Were you doing that kind of thing? Or were
so,
you?
So it's interesting because I don't know. I didn't stay up for that long.
Mm-hmm.
At like 2 days at max.
Okay.
Like I was one of those people that could sleep on it if I needed to.
Really?
And it's a rare thing, but it happens, I think. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could consume enough alcohol to pass out.
But. Yeah. I've heard of people like being able to like sleep on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe not. But yeah, I didn't stay up that long. I never hit psychosis either, which I'm kind of grateful for.
Congratulations. That's...
Yeah.
I never abused a methamphetamine long enough to reach psychosis.
Yeah,
that's you know,
yeah.
Which is usually day 3 or 4, you know, when that begins.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, and I did it for, I want to say, and I didn't do it. I don't even know. I tried it, and I instantly knew that I was. Can I swear on this thing?
Yeah, this is explicit. It's,
is it?
Yeah, under all the podcasts, it says explicit, so you can fucking say whatever you want.
Okay, I was fucked after that. I knew that. I knew right as I took the first hit of it, mm-hmm. my life was, like, going down this dark hole. Like, I remember this moment,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, oh, no.
Did it feel good? Was it like, this is... There's something about this that you just went...
Yeah.
It just grabbed you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember thinking, wow... This stuff makes me stay up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not tired. Uh-huh. Also, I'm not hungry.
Oh.
I don't want to eat either. And mm-hmm. I've had a few eating disorders too back in the day.
We'll come back to those.
Yeah. Okay. And so those two things were just great. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was skinny and I didn't need I was just up, you know, I wanted to clean. I remember that, specifically that, too.
Were you a good organizer at this time, too?
No, absolutely
not.
Not
a good organizer, nope. But you
think
like
I
to
would
clean.
Be, but I...
Well, some people are.
Yeah.
You see their closets and every hanger is an inch apart perfectly or something like that. You
know, mine's more like, I don't even know. I just remember it was like little things I wanted to clean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know. But, yeah. But later on... So long story short, I got kicked. My mom kicked me out, and this is a little bit after I got fired, and then I just went off the rails.
And crashed both
tried
cars.
Meth.
So you crashed the both cars after you got fired. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long of a period was this? You said I moved. I like kind of lived away from the house for 3 weeks.
It was like 2 months. So, I'm going to be honest.
Okay. So a couple months.
Yeah, a couple months. Okay. Yeah, and I just. Yeah, I was unrecognizable when my mom picked me up. I got scared one day because I was dating someone at the time, and he was a meth dealer. All right.
That's not uncommon.
And
because usually there's not a cash exchange,
yeah,
you know.
So, yeah, right. Exactly. And so...
But there are expectations that go along with...
True.
If you're getting free.
Yeah. Yeah. And he... We smoked all of the stash, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any. And we didn't have cigarettes. We didn't have money. And we didn't have anything. Like, just, you know, being sober, literally. And nothing. No nicotine or anything. And I freaked out. I freaked out. I couldn't handle it. I didn't know what to do. I was almost like I reverted back to like being like 3 years old and having a tantrum almost.
You had a regression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I didn't know. I couldn't handle it. I didn't know how to deal with this. I didn't know how to be sober. And I wasn't okay with it. And then I scared myself.
But are you talking about you going through withdrawals or just...
Yeah. And just... Yeah. And just... Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, so yeah. Not having the ability to just get back to, you know, have a substance available to you.
Right.
You didn't know what to do. You're in yeah. withdrawals.
Yeah.
Was this how long of a period from when it ran out that you decided?
It was literally, like, not even a day.
Okay. So this was definitely withdrawals.
Yeah.
You were definitely withdrawals.
And what happened is I got scared because I've never had this happen before. Granted, I was using almost every day for like almost a year
mm-hmm.
or two, probably two,
mm-hmm.
maybe three.
Some substances,
yeah.
Yeah. You weren't on meth that long.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I wasn't on meth that mm-hmm. for 2 years now.
Yeah.
But so I called my mom because I hadn't talked to her mm-hmm. and I just said, I've been doing bad things. I was a little out of it, too. I was like, I'm doing bad
how
things.
How much are you doing? A lot of filtering?
You're yeah.
telling her just little
Just
little
a
bits.
Little out of yeah. it, yeah.
yeah.
No, I was...
Mom, I'm living with a meth dealer, and
yeah.
I'm strung out, and
right.
I'm going through withdrawal.
Yeah, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
Nope, hell no. And you know what's funny is I actually remember I was still high when I called my mom. Like it's not like the meth, like, cause it lasts. I mean, you know, and we smoked a lot. I'm going to be honest cause you can't really stop.
Well, and if he was a dealer and you ended up smoking all his stash and you ran out of money.
Yeah.
So yeah. Thinking.
Yeah. And so I was still, but I still needed it. Does that make sense?
Not a really good dealer though that smokes all his stash.
No, he's horrible. Horrible. Yeah. He should not do that. Bad idea. There's, I feel like, yeah.
Anyway, well,
yeah,
that's
for
besides
another time.
The point. That's beside the point.
Yeah, I just remember calling my mom and crying, like, and just saying, like, I've been doing bad drugs, mom. Like, I need help.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this anymore. I mm-hmm. don't want to do this anymore. I scared myself, and so I drove to this D's, and my car literally, it wasn't totaled,
mm-hmm.
but, like, my front was, like, smashed in, and I actually remember a few days before that, I was, like, yelling, and I was like, who crashed my car? Which one of you crashed? Like, seriously? They're like, Alicia, don't you remember, like, you crashed it just the other day? You ran into a pole, remember? Well, no, and that freaked me out, too. Didn't remember that. So I did black out at yeah. one point.
Well, and this is one of those fascinating realizations is people struggle with. They think that primarily people black out on alcohol, but you can black out on any drug.
No, yeah.
And methamphetamine is another one that can people black out on.
Yeah.
And I've had worked with clients over the years where they come into treatment and they don't remember meeting me or talking to
yeah.
me. And then all of a sudden, 2 days later, they ask me, who am I?
Yeah.
You know, and I go, I'm the person that did your admit. And they go, oh. But they were,
yeah.
you know, they were blacked out
yeah.
on meth when they came in.
Yeah.
And they slept for 2 days, woke up and
yeah.
didn't remember anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. Because I didn't that's the one time I don't remember crashing my mm-hmm. car or anything. But I just told my mom, like, I, you know, and she's like, meet me here. So I did. And I looked really bad. And I was tweaked out.
I know our listeners can't see your face right now.
I know. I have really good facial expressions. Yeah,
the facial expressions.
Yeah.
Where, like, I look really bad. And
yeah, and I'm all,
looking at me like, you get it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we get it. So, yeah.
And my mom said, are you willing to go to detox? And I said, yeah. Yeah, I am. And at this point in time, I was 17. So I couldn't be admitted into the adult unit. I was admitted into the adolescent, teenager unit, I would say, at the U.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the best weeks I've ever had, besides, withdrawing. But, it was awesome. I'm like, I love being sober. Like, I'd rather be sober than do what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of realizations. I met a lot of friends and people, a lot of...
When you say met, do you mean you made a lot of friends there, or did you meet people you had been out, you'd been using with?
No.
Okay.
I made new friends there. Yeah. And I met a few people that were doing drugs, and they were, younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt... And their stories were... I was like... It was sad. It was really sad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met people, that were struggling with suicidal thoughts and, depression and... I actually met someone. This is actually a funny story, just a little side note. I used to go to a daycare when I was younger, and I met someone there that was who I went to daycare with when I was like 5 to 10 or whatever.
Wow.
And so we were like, hey, why are you here? But it was cool seeing her, and you're not supposed to exchange information, but with some people we did. And we made new friends, and we're still friends on social media and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, wasn't going to school, high school. I mean, I hadn't been in a month or so. And so they said to my, talk to me and my mom that we can do this program called Teen Scope. And it's downstairs in the neuropsychiatric unit at the U. And it's just Teen Scope. Pretty much.
Yeah.
And it has it's kind of like a day treatment almost. And you do school and you also, do therapies,
mm-hmm.
All different kinds of therapy, and you have lunch up there. It's actually really cool. And I really want to go back. Not really. But I just wish I would have lived it up more
mm-hmm.
there because it's so cool. And it was such an, and I also met someone that used to be my teacher at a daycare there, and she was one of the administrators there. So
wow.
There's that. There was a lot of and I also knew someone that I used to party with. There was one person there.
In the Teen Scope.
Yeah.
Teen Scope program is an adolescent program.
Yeah.
At uni. And they do take, if you, depending on age, they will take some people that have just maybe turned 18, depending on where they are
yeah.
and if they're still in high school.
Yeah.
So it's, not everyone that turns 18 automatically goes into the adult program
yeah.
if they haven't finished high school.
Right. And yeah. I was turning 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I turned 18 in Teen Scope.
Yeah.
So they kept me. And you got to go home at night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I eventually found a way around the system. And I got drug tested. And
wait. So you're feeling the best you have in your whole life. Everything's going great. And but some little,
yep.
you had a little itch somewhere still.
Somewhere, I guess. Yeah, I was doing good. And we also had this guy that...
Hang on. I want to just... Was it someone you met at Teen Scope?
No, this is... I'm talking about... No.
Was when you were out of Teen Scope?
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't use while you were in Teen Scope?
I did.
Okay.
That's... Yeah.
Okay.
So I stopped... And then I realized, I was like, I want to drink on the weekends,
oh.
which you're not supposed to do. But I was like, well, you can't find it in a drug test, so might as well, right?
Uh-huh.
I just can't do anything else. And so I started drinking with my old friends.
Oh, your old friends.
Yeah. And so...
What a pattern for you.
I know, right?
Yeah, yeah. What a pattern for you old friends.
It's not okay. a good thing.
Okay.
But I, my ex-boyfriend at the time, that group, and... Which, I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. Anyways, I started drinking, and then one
I'm
night...
I'm not going to challenge you yet on that, but kay. I bet you know why. But
yeah.
we'll come back.
No, yeah.
Yeah, we'll come back.
Yeah. And then I just one night, I smoked weed. It was just a... It was passing around, and I just hit the pipe, and I was like, fuck. Sorry. Fuck. Like, I just, so you think I failed my drug test.
You think if you say fuck really softly in the microphone that no one will hear it?
They may not, but... You know. I turned my head away, too, a little bit. Slightly. yeah. But, yeah, Yeah, and then I realized I failed the drug test
for THC.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, might as well go balls to the wall. So I did.
That night?
Yeah.
So as soon as...
I didn't do any other drugs, though. I just drank a lot.
Okay.
Good excuse to drink, I guess. You fail a drug test, so you just go crazy.
You mean it's good rationalization. Yeah, good excuse.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yep. And I took my friend home that morning, and I remember stashing 9 beers in my car during this, you know, party that I was at.
Mm-hmm.
And I drank all of them in the morning because that's what I do, I guess.
You drank 9 beers in the morning?
Yeah. I don't know if that's normal, but probably not. And I took him home and he said,
turn. Oh, for some of our listeners, yes, yeah. It will be normal.
Okay, cool.
Or what may have been normal at one time. But
I'm not alone.
Most people don't drink 9 beers in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I took him home and he said, turn here. And I was delayed in my reaction. And I turned really sharp and I ran my car over a curb, knocked my wheel under my car, and like all this weird stuff, and pretty much crashed my car. I couldn't drive it.
Hmm.
And it was like snowing. It was freezing, I remember. And I was 18 at this point. And I called my mom and I was like, and this was her car. I stole her car at the time.
Second time. Okay.
And I was like, Mom, can you come get me? I have a flat tire. And she's like, you know, I would, but you stole my car, Alicia. You stole my car. So I don't have a car to come get you.
I'd be glad to come get you.
But
guess what? I don't have a car to come get you.
Yeah. So she called my grandma and they came and got me. And I was drunk and teen scope on that Monday. You know, my therapist, Zena, such a cool therapist. She's from the Bermuda Triangle. She's awesome. Anyways, sorry, I had to tell you because she got me sand one time.
She got you sand?
Sand, like in a bottle from there?
Yeah.
It's awesome. Anyways, it's pink. Anyways.
Bermuda, it does have pink sand beaches. I've been there a few times.
Yeah. I want to go one day. But I...
By the way, the Bermuda Triangle is actually out in the ocean.
Yeah. Isn't it?
It's a triangle between... Awesome. Yes, yeah.
Yeah. But... yeah, we talked with my therapist, and she said, you know, this isn't really working. She's going to need something more.
From you?
Yeah.
Yeah, going to need something more from you.
Yeah, and she's like, she's going to need higher treatment, we think, and we found a really good place for her,
mm-hmm.
and it's called Wasatch Recovery,
mm-hmm.
and the owner's coming in today to come talk to you,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, what? I'm really scared. I don't know what's going on, really. You know, I just had a bad night. Just crashed my mom's car. I don't know what the big deal is.
Yeah. Woke up and had 9 beers for breakfast.
I don't know what I didn't know what the problem was. I mean, I was
most people don't have 9 beers for breakfast.
Right.
Most people.
Yeah. Right. And so I talked to Mark, and
mm-hmm.
I had my teacher come and sit in with me because I was scared, and he just said, you know, this is a great place, but you're gonna have to decide by tomorrow because we have beds to fill and they fill fast. And so I said, okay, I'll do it. And that next day, they don't do intakes on Saturdays, but they did for me. And
'cause you were special.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm just
super special. I'm just kidding. But I, you know.
They did it because they saw the problem.
And yeah.
So they realized that you needed.
Yeah.
If you went back home, the chances of you end up showing back at treatment.
And I was so young, too, that they're probably like, if this is probably the only chance we got, you know.
Right.
And so my mom drove me up there and I remember it was snowing. It's really pretty up there when it snows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really scared because I was 18 now. And there was no more, you know, children or kids my age, usually, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk in, and it was really warm, and the people there were awesome. And long story short, I got checked into rehab November 21st of 2014. And I was really scared. I remember that. And really confused and not knowing what to expect. But I realized, you know, I didn't, it was actually the week of Thanksgiving, and I've spent Thanksgiving with my family every year for, since I was born. And, my family was really sad at that time. I couldn't call them 'cause I was on blackout, which means like you can't call anyone for a week. And, but I had Thanksgiving there. It was a, you know, I couldn't have gone at a better time, I don't think. It was good for me to not be able to do that. And, you know, it, I learned a lot for sure. But I have this problem, which, you know, I've realized over treatment and, you know, finding everything, why I use and why I drink. And a lot of it has to do with males and their, I need their acceptance. And, cause I don't feel good about myself, so I need you to give it to me, but it never works that way. And you know, that's why I usually drink. Granted, with self-love is a, one of the biggest things I think for everyone is one of the biggest, things that people drink over.
One of the biggest issues, when people are not self-accepting, self-loving. When it's, which is the opposite of that, is condemning and, and shame.
And
so the question I'm curious, I mean, and this idea of, you know, seeking approval from men. And you did start out telling us, or telling listeners today that, that you were, grew up in a single parent home. And where was that?
So, I don't know.
That's fair. I mean, that's, if you don't,
I mean, I just, from what I've heard, he, my mom, you know, said, you know, Alicia needs a like full-time dad in her life. It can't be a part-time. In and out, sometimes here and there. And so can you be here for her? If not, like, we can't do, I can't do this. And he just said, I can't do it. And so he was never around. Last time I saw him when I was two, but I don't remember it. And, you know, later on, around when I was 14, he messaged me on Facebook and was like, if you're the daughter of Monica Matthews, then I'm your dad. And just, I was like a mess. I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. Like, I've not never met you. Like, I was really confused, and I was really emotional about it. And, yeah, he messaged me, like, when I was, like, 15, too, and then 16, and then he never, I've never...
Never heard from him since.
Yeah.
Did you respond to him at that time?
I did not.
Well, he, you know, and probably... just, you know, trying to look at this as objectively as possible, it, you know, he may have wondered, you know, in his own mind, does she ever wonder where her dad is or those kinds of things?
And I feel like, of course.
It would be normal to do that, right?
But also part of me is like, well, if you weren't here, you know, the 14 years of my life, like, why now?
But he made a choice.
Yeah.
And so you weren't necessarily willing or... wanted to all of a sudden invite someone into your life that wasn't there for the early developmental years. But asking that question was, you know, probing the idea that you were constantly seeking out approval or acceptance from men. And that would maybe be amplified or increased due to not having a strong male role model. Though you, you did have a... You know,
My uncle is an awesome person. I looked up to him a lot. Aerospace engineer, went to college, and look up to him a lot. And also my grandpa, not my biological, but my step grandpa. Right. So, he's been there for me, and I look up to him too. So I do have male figures, but I never had a dad, I guess you could say. And I think that I know, actually, a lot of that when I started to use was one of my excuses. Was I don't have a dad. I'm abandoned, and no one loves me.
Oh, I relate to that one.
Yeah, no one loves me. So you know, and I think me not having a dad role model in my life has a lot to do with my male issues. Mm-hmm. I really do think so. I mean, even though I did have like a great uncle and a great grandpa, they're still not my dad. You know, I believe that has somewhat to do with it for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you started Wasatch. You got, you know, you're going through the holiday. So your first Thanksgiving without your family. Christmas.
I spent, you know, 6 hours or something like that. It was a long time because it's Christmas. And that was good. And my uncle and aunt came down and they found out that I wasn't, my mom or my grandma didn't tell them that I was in rehab yet. And so they found out when they got here. but they came and visited
family secrets.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And, even family night, they came to family night, which was awesome. And I was in there for 105 days and I did have, relationships in there too. They got shut down every time and, you know, I'm actually glad I did that in there because I learned so much about myself and what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I used them as a distraction from really what was happening.
Sure.
You know, and they used me. Yeah.
Just like drugs.
Yeah.
You use men like drugs?
I do.
Oh.
I do. Yeah. They're more addicting, I feel like. Like, I still, you know, being sober, but they still sometimes get me, but I've been working on that a lot recently. I feel like for like a year now or more.
Yeah.
Just on that issue, you know, because, you know, drinking and drugs are just a symptom. Good words of Paul Randack.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, I was in there for 105 days and then I went to sober living. And that was a good experience as well.
You went to Project Recovery, which is no longer around, but yeah.
Yep. Met a few people there that I've been reunited with. It was a really good experience down there because I live downtown and I got my first job out of rehab and I was fending for myself somewhat. I mean, I wasn't making nearly as much as I could, like, pay rent or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I had, you know, I could buy my own food and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked everywhere. And I loved it. I loved it down there. And I did IOP down there, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't go into alumni for a little while because I think I did. A few times. Because it was hard to get up there on Sundays, but I still did try to get up there. Because I didn't have a car at the time. But then I was sober. Well, I was told in rehab not to get in a relationship in early recovery. And I was very adamant about not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not getting in a relationship. And I was in sex as well. And I hadn't had any relationship or sex for like 11 months, almost a year. And then I found someone in the sober living.
And they found you. So
yeah. In the sober living house, in the men's house, found a guy I liked and we were together for a little while.
And this was, of course, all a secret.
Yeah. For the most part.
So this is that interesting time, right? Is that,
yeah,
you know, I start again living a secret life,
right? Yeah. And well, see, with this guy, I didn't. So this is a guy I met in sober living, and we didn't really keep it a secret because I moved out, and then he was still there, and they don't really care about they didn't even, you know, it was an interesting time, but I he ended up relapsing and I couldn't deal with that. So mm-hmm. I, you know, he ended things or whatever. And then is when I got in a relationship with mm-hmm. someone else mm-hmm. and, we had to keep it a secret. You know, we couldn't tell anyone.
Holding secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like secrets keep you sick somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
I'm
hard
not,
to be authentic, right?
I mean,
it's hard to show yeah. up and also then I'm collaborating on that clandestine lifestyle with somebody else.
Right.
And even though there may be some healthy, positive things that are happening,
no,
you know,
yeah.
as far as, you know, vulnerability mm-hmm. and intimacy in the relationship, there's this other part of it that, you know, I can't necessarily,
yeah.
you know, be completely open with people about right. this. Or I mean, if there are people that I can be open with it, then they're also holding the secret.
Right.
And it gets yeah. kind of back into
kinda,
some of the similar old behaviors.
It does.
It's just that, which is part of the reason why it's recommended not to date.
Right.
You know, in recovery yeah. with people that you're in recovery with.
Yeah. But, and yeah. at this time, I was about 2 years sober, year and a half mm-hmm. to 2 years. And, so, I mean, the secret part for me, because I wasn't in any program.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for me, it was, I was okay with letting everyone know, you know, but this other person was, you know, in the program currently. And we're not supposed to date each other, past, present, future clients mm-hmm. or anything, mm-hmm. you know. And so that was, you know, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But... you know, I learned a lot about, you know, I don't know, a lot about life, I guess I would say, in that time period. Because I had never been in a relationship where I didn't have sex on the first date
mm-hmm.
or the second or third. You know what I'm saying? I mean, not every first date I'm going to have sex, but I'm just saying, like, so fast. Like, it's a part of, like... dating almost mm. in my world that I lived in for 4 or 5 years or whatever mm-hmm. and you know for like this is the first time ever I didn't have it for like 3 months before we actually even started to like you know anything and this was I was shocked you know it was like wow this mm. is cool
yeah
you know like this isn't more than just you know
it's more than just sex, is
yeah,
what you're saying.
Yeah, and I was like, this is cool, you know? And I didn't want to... I wanted this to be different, you know? Because I've done the same thing over and over again for who knows how long. And
about how
you
long?
Get sick
you
of
said
it.
4 or 5 years. Is it yeah. longer than that?
No, 4 or 5.
If you're 18 or 9... No, you're 9. You're 20 at this time,
I'm 22,
right?
20, almost 22.
At this point.
Yeah, at this
okay.
point. I'm 22 in a month or two.
No, but I mean when you were...
Oh, I'm talking about like 16.
Okay. No, what I'm saying is that...
Oh.
So when this was going on, when this relationship was going on, how old were you? You
19.
Were like 19. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so I was only like a year and a half sober at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just... I would never regret that relationship ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were still really good friends and... you know, I feel like we both grown from it and hopefully, and, yeah, yeah. But that was one of my biggest relationships I've had, that actually meant something,
mm-hmm.
I feel like. And we dated for a while, and then we broke up pretty much and, I was okay. I was really sad. And really hurt and confused a little. And I just, for me, I couldn't talk to him. I just needed to heal from
mm-hmm.
it. And we did, you know, kind of like hang out here and there. But then there was a point in time where we didn't talk to each other. And then I... was like, well, I don't know how to date. So, without, like, getting drunk. Like, I don't know how to date. So I, after 3 years of sobriety, being an idiot.
How long after the breakup did you drink?
5 to 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah. And I drank because I wanted to... this guy I had in mind, like, I didn't know how to talk to him or, like...
Mm-hmm.
So I got drunk and, yeah.
Did a lot of talking?
Did a lot of talking.
Okay.
Intimately talking. No, just kidding. We didn't actually have sex or anything, but okay. It was still cool. But even though, you know, this happened and I realized, like, that night...
It's just a fascinating story we tell ourselves, right?
I
mean, the idea that for me... to be comfortable in that kind of situation, I need to have some kind of emotional or mental lubrication so that I'm, you know, I'm flowing, I'm going, I'm not being awkward, right? Yeah.
And so I'm just like, it's a big story. A lot of people I've noticed do that same story with different things, not just with guys, but with people in general, like socializing.
Sure.
It's a big thing. But yeah, and then I was like, hey, that wasn't that bad.
The drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, I did
that
okay.
That was fine. Like, I only had, like, a little bit.
I only had a little bit.
I only had a little bit, you know?
After a couple of years of being clean, it only takes a little
bit.
It only takes a little bit.
You know, it's crazy. Yeah. And so then I thought I could do it, you know, drink again or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I started to drink a lot. And I just remember...
How quickly? How soon did you
realize?
Were you back up to some similar levels
before? Second day.
Oh, you went right back to it.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And I wasn't drinking every day.
Okay.
I want to clarify that I wasn't going back to literally like what I used to do.
Okay.
But I was. I remember my mind. I remember talking to Brady actually.
Okay.
And I called him and I was crying and I was just like I don't know what to do. I can't stop thinking about it. I can't. It's on my mind like every second.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, like I can't stop thinking about it. I just want to get drunk. Like it's weird. And he's just like, you need to, you know, start getting back to IOP again. Like let's, you know, or you know, something. And so I went on this bender. And it was only like 3 weeks, I think, at the most. Which is, you know, here we go.
No, only 3 weeks.
Hey, it's pretty good.
No, I know, but the fascinating, you know, I mean, how we minimize it. It was only 3 weeks. So, but anyway, okay, so 3 weeks later.
Yeah, and I talked to Jason, and I was like, can I get back into IOP? Like, I need support, and I need to do something. And he's like, of course. And so I had one last day to get drunk. And I did.
Yahoo! I'm going back to IOP.
Yeah, getting sober again. And so I drank that night. And I went back to IOP the next day. And I met some new friends and old friends that came back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really good experience. Since then, this was almost a year ago. This was a year ago. And plus some change. I've relapsed like a day or, you know, a day or two, you know, from the past. But it's... I feel like every time I relapse, it's something I learn about myself and what I'm missing almost and what I'm not doing. Like this last time I wasn't connected with people. I didn't have a community and, I just had some people here and there. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't like we were friends.
Well,
and
this connections. Is, I mean, this is the point of what one needs to be careful of with, and the problem with dating in itself is that often our life becomes re-meshed.
Right.
With just one person.
Yeah.
And they become our primary support.
Right.
For, you know, for connection and community. And that just can't sustain us as human beings.
Yeah.
The larger our community is, and it doesn't have to be something enormous, but, you know, it's good to have you know, a half a dozen people that we can really count on at any time.
Right, yeah.
Under any circumstances.
Yeah. And I have a few, like, some in recovery, some not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to make sure I still have those connections and I still talk to those people regularly. You know, even though we have busy schedules, you know, it's good to make it a point to, you know, connect. And I realized that was my biggest one this time around. You know, and then I realized, like, the guy thing. You know, I've struggled with it since I was younger till, you know, today. And I'm working on it.
You don't need to go into details, but when do you think there was the time that you noticed? Because the question was, we were going to come back around to is, why do you drink? And and even before, I'm assuming you were dating, or at least, you know, you were beginning to reach out to men for validation before you used substances or not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I have to think about this for a sec. No, I think it's when I started.
So they are connected.
Yeah.
The using substances to be okay, and also using men.
Yeah, because I don't remember feeling that crazy about it. You know, it was like, meh. And then I started using, and it was like, need something. I don't know really what I thought, but they're connected.
Well, the idea of it's not necessarily not knowing what I need, but I need something.
Yeah.
I'm not okay. Yeah. I'm not okay being alone, or I'm not okay, you know, without my feelings being medicated, so that I'm reaching out to people, or I'm getting into relationships that, you know, maybe they're not based upon, you know, a healthy lifestyles or, you know, or healthy habits. They're more coming from a place of deep unresolved issues or need.
And I feel like this, I feel like just like a drug, male validation is like a drug for me, and it makes me feel, I think it makes me feel okay. I'm okay now.
Mm-hmm.
Someone loves me. You know, and it's just so irrational.
Yeah.
When I put it into words and talk about it.
I must be okay now because
they're
telling
me.
They like me.
Yeah, it's so irrational that I think about it now. But, you know, I've learned a lot about that for sure. And I've been working on it. And I think I've gotten a lot better. And it's still a work in progress, but it's possible to work through it and change those behaviors and habits and. You know, yeah. I say yeah a lot.
Is that what you're noticing today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do Roger. Okay. That. Okay. So you go back into your support system. You began reaching out. You began doing, you know.
Oh. Sorry, I forgot to add something.
Yeah,
okay, so I was meeting with Todd too, kind of within this range of when getting out of treatment and sober living and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we're talking about
my
Todd Sylvester, who was on the podcast a few months ago. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
yeah. And I also,
Todd's a great life coach.
Yeah,
he really
is. He was my coach for a really long time, since I was in treatment till even after, like maybe a year or two after. And you know, I had to drop out of high school, going into rehab. I was too far behind. I mean, I could have tried to catch up, but in rehab, why would you try to catch up when you're trying to work on yourself? I felt like that. It was just hard to do school and rehab, you know,
because
it's already a really big, you know, it was just a focusing on me, and I got my GED. I'm in college now, third year in college. Anyways, that's what I was going to say.
Okay. All right. And again, having those kinds of support systems, having that kind of community and connection out there, and then doing activities around those things. So some of those components of being able to expand out what seems like, you know, sort of normal socializing events, especially in recovery, can kind of take on a different feel and a different stance within. Especially if it's, you know, like hiking, and I mean softball is really big, and then in Salt Lake, as far as the recovery community goes, actually it's big everywhere in the recovery communities. You know, we have a here. In our community, we have a book club that's pretty strong. We have some other things, you know, the refuge recovery meetings and things like that, where people get out and meet and so on. So I think that becomes the basis. And, of course, aftercare.
Yeah.
Aftercare becomes one of those.
Yeah, that's one of mine.
One of those important components for people, for many people. It becomes a way to stay connected and to show up.
Yeah.
And to support others as well.
Yeah, aftercare is mine because I work on Friday nights now, so I can't go to softball. But aftercare is one of mine for sure. One of those connectors to help me stay connected. Hmm.
Okay, so let's move on to a different section, if that's okay. This idea of lessons in life that you've learned, and the notion that you know, there becomes times or moments when we either something just sparks or ignites us in such a way that we go, that's an important moment, or that's I learned something valuable, like a lesson, like a life lesson. Do you have any a person or an event that you remember that you kind of woke up and realized that?
I have a few.
Yeah.
But I remember this vividly in rehab. Around my 60-day mark, I was in there. I literally woke up one day and realized, I was like, what the hell am I doing? Alicia, you need to do this. And this is my life lesson to myself, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you need to do this. Like, you're going to do this. I just decided one day that I was going to do this, and I did it. And I feel like, you know, the therapist and everyone helped me through that, kind of realizing this. Life lessons are interesting because I feel like a lot of people kind of give you advice, but ultimately, like, you're kind of teaching yourself this life lesson, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Well, and I remember... I remember the dynamic between you and your mom.
Yeah.
And I think that I may have used such terminology as one of the most enmeshed relationships I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because you would finish each other's sentences, you know,
and
talk sometimes almost as one person.
Yeah.
You know. And I... I know we're laughing. But... What did you learn about that? I'm curious, you know, because I don't even know if you knew it or were aware of it at the time. This is in that first 60 to 100, you know, 90 days that sort of this, I remember beginning to, you know, push on this one.
Yeah. So, when I was in house and I was this was brought up, I was a little confused, but I was like, that makes sense. Like, that really makes sense. We are really codependent and, you know, and we do have, I mean, this is, my mom's hurting so much because I was hurting so much, you know, and, like we hurt for one another, you know, but now, like today, I mean, obviously, we've gotten a lot better than we have,
good.
You know, from the start.
Yeah.
But we, I mean, we still are somewhat codependent in ways here and there. But we have, we work on it a lot. But I wouldn't trade my mom for the world and our relationship for the world. I mean, the codependency, I mean, obviously, we want to work on that. Mm-hmm. But, you know... She's one of my best friends and my mom, you know, and I wouldn't, you know, trade it, but we are working on it and getting better with the codependency and, you know, we really don't see each other that much because of school and work. We both are going to school, and working. But yeah, and she's doing good, and
I see your mom.
I know all you the see time. Probably her than I. She probably sees you more than I see you.
Maybe. Yeah.
You guys probably see each other more than I see both of you.
Probably. That's because we work together.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah.
All right. As far as the things that you do that bring you joy, what do you find that brings you the most joy in life?
So, I would say I love hiking. And in the winter, I like to snowboard, like I said. Mm-hmm. I like snow. I know that's weird, but when it's snowy outside, I am happy as a clam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just like, I feel super at peace, but,
I don't think that's weird.
Staying connected too. I have joy in that. Music. I've always been into music, but I've been recently, more into it now. Realizing the different ways music can, the different wavelengths that hits the ear drum really interests me.
Mm-hmm.
And so and how it can change the mood almost. I like
different keys have different keys. Energy. Yeah. So associated with them. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm interested in that and been listening to more music. And I like to read too. And I actually like school. I like to go to school and I like to do it. And so, it's hard, but I like to do it.
So, which I'm curious.
And family. And
family, yeah. Does studying what is a passion for you, you know?
Yeah.
And you have, you know, I've been knowing you as long as you've been on this path. And
yeah.
And the things that you have, you know, done as far as where you've, you know, focused your attention on with school.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking to do this at some point as a career. Is what I get.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the passion that you get from, you know, working in the field of biology.
Yeah. So I decided my major and...
You did?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So I'm still obviously kind of like, you know. But marine biology, I think, is where I'm going. I'm taking some ecology class right now and doing algae samples and researching the diversity in green algae in different lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I love biology. I know it's my career or major. I know it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I know. Because we actually the other day we went in to see the cadaver lab and my friends were all sorts of happy and I was just like, I don't get it. I don't want to be in the cadaver lab. Like, I don't.
Which one were you at?
Just the slit at Slick.
Okay.
And it scared me. I was not knowing what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is cool, but I just know that's not my major.
Mm-hmm.
So, and narrowing things down, you know,
sure.
But I know biology, something in biology is what I'm going to do. And I don't know, it just clicked in my head one day. I was like, I think this is my major. I think I want to do this. And my goal is to graduate here and then move to Australia and pursue my master's and doctorate there. And yeah, that's my dream.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it.
And... from the reason why I'm bringing this up too, and especially around the conversation of joy, is you radiate when you talk about this subject. You know, something really vibrates and comes out.
Yeah,
and it's evident.
I feel it too. Yeah. Like I'm smiling right now, just because you can't see my face. Yeah.
Okay,
but yeah.
So the. You know the paradigms that I deal with, these, maybe they're more archetypal, but the notion of the fixer and the saboteur, you know, that these the dynamics of those relationships, the fixer being the one that wants to change other people, or, you know, they devote their life to that, and the saboteur being the one that, you know, goes around and tries to keep everything out of balance and does their very best to keep a certain level of chaos always there so that the unexpected can become the norm.
Right.
Where do you find yourself or see yourself in those different dynamics? And understanding that we switch these roles from time to time.
Yeah. Fixer, I would say that's more of a common one for me. Mm-hmm. But I know I sometimes... What was it again?
The saboteur.
Right. I see myself doing that sometimes too. It's rare when mm-hmm. I do that, the saboteur. Like, I rarely do that. But I do know that, like, I can look back to times where that is something I
especially in relationships. Do you want to make sure? Yeah. Does the other person's welfare often become more important than yours?
Yeah.
I guess is the question. Yeah.
Yeah, and even in family, I guess I would say too, like, problems with that and taking it in and like making it your own mm-hmm. kind of thing. I try to balance that out more now. Mm-hmm. But it was super common when I in early recovery, for sure, like all the time, and me trying to fix other people too. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, Alicia, you just need to fix yourself. Just focus on you.
Yeah.
And try your best to, you know, fix what's within and try to figure out, you know, the problems you're having and why you do the things mm-hmm. you do. But one thing, a life lesson, I have to go back to that.
Oh, no, but yeah, anytime. Yes, please do.
Is interesting because I learned so much about my thinking. This might not even be a life lesson, but it changed my life, I guess, and how I think.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking errors and how you think has blown my mind since I had that topic first brought up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, to this day, you know... What kind of thinking am I thinking right now? You know, black and white? Am I thinking black and white? You know, or am I minimizing? You know, or am I maximizing it out of proportion?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these thinking errors that, you know, is so common with people, I think about, and I try to, like, balance that out. And, you know, and I've been doing a lot better with anxiety. I've been kind of struggling with that a few months ago. But I've realized, you know, I'm going to be okay mm-hmm. and all this stuff. So thinking is one of the biggest life lessons I've learned and how we think and why we think the things we do and how to fix that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what I heard you say was that you're becoming more aware of your defense mechanisms and how they play a role in your life.
Yeah.
And
how common they are when you don't, if you're not aware of them, you don't really know.
Yeah. Sure. And then you notice the black and white and concrete thinking.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Lots, actually.
I think that the understanding, first of all, that maybe that sort of gets us over, can get us over the hurdle, is that we're responsible for our story, whatever the story is, regardless of what the story, you know, what we're communicating, but that it's our story, and actually we wrote it, and it's not something that happened to us necessarily, even though it may feel that way at some times, that the story is true because it's something that we interpreted and developed our own narrative about.
Right.
When the good news is, of course, that, you know, we wrote it so we can change it and rewrite it and those kinds of things, which is kind of what I'm hearing you say.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Sort of said in a different way.
You know, I could look back on my past and get really sad and depressed mm-hmm. because it wasn't a good time in my life, but... Whenever I look back at those things, I always am really grateful for the chances I've had mm-hmm. And the circumstances that led up to this, you know. They weren't I mean, one of the worst times in my life, but it turned out to be one of the best things that's ever mm-hmm. happened to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what being open and being willing to, you know, learn from... our mistakes, if we want to be so bold as to call these things, but at least our choices and the things that we have done, and understand why. You know, why did I make the choices I do? Why am I seeking things out in a specific way?
Right.
What am I searching for? Even in self-medication, what is my goal there? Yeah. Ultimately, what am I mm-hmm. trying to change about myself
yeah.
that I'm not okay with?
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. Let's share with us, if you would, how you connect. I use this term in here, and you probably heard it before. How do you connect to your Zen zone, that Zen place, that quiet place within you that recharges and connects you?
I use a lot of meditation, to be honest. Mm. If I wanted to get to a place of calm and collective and just my own kind of safe place, I always do a lot of deep breathing mm-hmm. techniques, learn from yoga and stuff. And I like to hike and be in nature. Those are probably my two, like, to get there, mm-hmm. I'll do that.
Yeah.
And I usually hike by myself if I want to get there in that Zen zone and calming, peaceful atmosphere is usually when I hike by myself and in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, deep breathing and just making sure I'm connected with my thoughts and my body and I'm present. Yeah.
This thing about holding space for ourselves, about being alone hiking. I mean, we've talked about this before, but
yeah.
that's probably one of my most important things in my life is to have that time.
Right.
And of course, out in nature.
Yeah.
And I love for that purpose the idea for me of being alone in the desert, you know,
yeah.
on a walkabout or something
yeah.
becomes a vital way for me to connect. And that especially this notion of meditation and breath work, they all anything that'll quiet and calm yeah. the story that constantly runs.
Also, a lot of rational recovery too. If I want to like stop the bad thoughts or mm-hmm. the negative thoughts, I usually have to switch my thinking around
mm-hmm.
and realize what I'm thinking and. Just like I said
before. Oh, the reframing, reprogramming.
Yeah.
yeah.
And
the AVRT or the NLP, whatever yeah. you want to call it.
To make it stop, you're right. The deep breathing really does do the trick.
It really does.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. A couple more things before we end
okay.
today. What are your thoughts or your experiences about God or faith or the universe or
this is so good.
How do you connect or how do you find that?
Yeah, so this is like my favorite topic.
Okay.
Because I think a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Being a biologist, mm-hmm. it's hard to think of a God per se.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I tell people because me and my friends, we ask each other, these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is I have, over time, I'm a pretty spiritual person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I obviously could work on it more and, get it, I don't know, back to where I was. But, I feel like I am pretty spiritual somewhat. And I don't have a God. And I don't either really talk to the universe. I do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more, I believe I have a higher being of myself that I talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's me. It's just above me. Does that make sense?
God lives within you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this, but it's this a lot of, you hear certain people based upon their theological background can say things like as above, so below kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that gets still somewhat of a separated, association
yeah.
attached to it. So maybe because I believe this is basically my way of thinking as well, at least my experience, that I when I'm out in nature, I connect
yeah.
to something.
Yeah.
But I know that I connect to it through me.
Yeah.
And so there's something in within myself that is, I've always called it the artistic self or the authentic self
yeah.
and those kinds of things that really is what resonates with that energy or force that I experience when I'm alone out
yeah.
in nature, especially.
Yeah. Me too. And,
yeah.
I'm my own God in per se. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. It's like...
It makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
A lot of people struggle with the idea of
that thinking, because
they think
general.
Of it as ego or narcissism, but it's just actually the opposite of that. It's accepting ourselves as an enlightened being.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And that's not necessarily narcissistic at all.
Yeah.
You know, or egotistical. It's about ownership.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Joint laughter is good too. Okay. Last topic we'll talk about, and I don't know if you've... I'm assuming you've listened to a few of these before. No, you have not listened to the podcast.
Okay. I need to, though.
Okay.
That's why I'm so scared.
Yeah, right.
But I'm good.
So the last question is about music, actually.
Okay.
So is there a song or two in your life that sort of represents... You feel as strongly in some way kind of represents your experience of yourself, and I say that almost in the sense too of if there was a life celebration, you know, what would be on your playlist? You know, like what would be the top one or two songs on your playlist that you would play at a life celebration for Alicia? You know what?
Yeah.
But or something that's just important and powerful for you today.
Okay. I mean, I have a few.
Yeah.
One of them,
and explain why that they're important.
This is fun. Yeah. Okay, one of them is okay. Don't draw a blank right now, Alicia. It's The Arrival of the Birds by the I can't even say their name. Somatic Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't know if you've seen the movie Theory of Everything, but it's one of the theme songs on there.
Yeah.
That really pretty. It almost touches you. You feel a certain way every time you listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
That song I love, and ever since I first heard it, I had to look it up and know what it was. And so whenever I think about it, I want it to be played at my wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, you know, birds coming and going through seasons and leaving and, you know, flying kind of thing. There's no words, but it's just the music, and it's really pretty, and it touches me every time. another song I would say would be by Rusted Root.
Okay.
On My Way.
On My Way.
I think that's what it's called.
I think I'm not 100% sure, but let's just go with that.
Yeah. And it's just about adventure, pretty much.
I know the song.
Phil Collins. Phil's got a place in my heart.
Phil.
Phil Collins.
So Studio.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Honestly, yes.
It is.
He might be in there. That I will probably have to be in there. But You'll Be in My Heart would be one of those.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, some old songs for sure. I have songs that are like remind me of people and that I... Mm-hmm. You know, listen to sometimes like Landslide by Fleetwood Mac, and Dust in the Wind by Kansas.
Oh,
we're
my.
Taking it back. I know.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah,
but they are good songs.
Yeah, they are.
America, Horse with No Name.
Yeah,
I love it.
Talk about the desert. Yeah.
Yes.
I had someone ask me that when I came back from my walkabout. So were you like, is this a horse with no name kind of experience you're talking about there?
Yeah.
And I mean, the reference was hilarious too. You know,
that's
and I
awesome.
Go, well, I guess you could say that. Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay. That's awesome.
Okay.
Paul, you lived that. That's awesome.
I lived the horse with
you
no
did.
Name. All right. Alicia, thank you so much for spending Saturday morning with us. This
is
great.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And this wasn't as bad, I don't think. You probably projected it would be, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you all for listening. As I mentioned before, next week, Brett Heiner will be here. And then the week after, Rebecca Holt. And she'll be doing some sound weaving. The meditation, the bowls. You've done those before, yeah.
Yeah, so cool.
Beautiful. We'll be doing some of those actually here during the Just Another Bozo on the Bus interview. So thank you all. We will talk to you real soon, and we'll go out as we usually do with a little Joan Osborne. Have a good week.